The test is in four part, part one, part two, part three, and part four. Now look at part one.
Part one.
Where Usha Lee McFarling sends this report on how global warming is affecting the behavior of polar bears and creating problems for the town of Churchill, which depends on the bears for tourism.
First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 4. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 4.
This week's Our World program comes from Canada, where Usha Lee McFarling sends this report on how global warming is affecting the behavior of polar bears and creating problems for the town of Churchill, which depends on the bears for tourism.
The Hudson Bay polar bears are an unusual group. They spend half their year living on the frozen sea ice. And in a normal year, around springtime, when the weather gets warmer, the bears move onto land as the sea ice begins to melt. Once they have done this, their lives enter a new phase, which involves a change in their metabolism. They don't hibernate, but their bodies slow down because they won't eat for the next 6 months. During this half of the year, they lose hundreds of pounds in weight. Each autumn, as the temperature falls, the bears migrate past the small town of Churchill, waiting for the Hudson Bay to freeze over again. When it has, the bears go back onto the sea ice. Now they can build up their fat reserves by feeding on seals. They survive because the surface of the Hudson Bay is normally frozen from mid-October through to mid-April. During these months, the bears sleep on ice floes and swim in the frigid waters. Normally, that means millions of dollars for the town of Churchill, which earns money by taking tourists into the tundra to see the bears as they pass by the town. However, recently the weather has been warmer and the bears' behavior has changed. The warm weather prevents the sea from freezing, and so the hungry bears come into town looking for food.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 5 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 5 to 10.
The town of Churchill has good reason to look after the bears. Rough estimates indicate the province of Manitoba earns in the region of $300 million each year from bear tourism. Bears are the backbone of our economy, said town manager Darren Ottaway. While Ottaway is concerned about an abundance of hungry bears coming to town in the short term, he is even more worried that global warming may mean no bears here at all one day. For 3 weeks during bear season, sleepy Churchill blooms as about 15,000 tourists stream through town, hoping to get close-up views of the animals from caravans of heated tundra buggies. Several chartered jets unload bear gazers at the Churchill Airport each day. Hotels and restaurants closed during the bleak winter filled to capacity. Polar bears are not currently an endangered species. Their total population is estimated to be from 22,000 to 27,000. But the 1,200 Hudson Bay bears could face what scientists call a local extinction. They could produce fewer cubs and eventually die out. Officials and business leaders in Churchill have already begun planning for alternative ways of generating income. Ottaway is promoting whale watching and is delighted that Japanese tourists are willing to brave the bone-chilling cold of winter to view the northern lights. It's super news for us, Ottaway said of the potential Japanese tourist boom. Warmer weather, Ottaway said, could also extend the shipping season on Hudson Bay and attract more filmmakers. The science fiction classic Iceman was filmed nearby, as well as an upcoming film, The Snowwalker. When people talk about climate change, you have to look at the benefits too, Ottaway said. Others, however, feel differently. The bears have been in our community for years, said one resident. They're like neighbors, and everybody ought to be helping to make sure their natural life cycle can be maintained.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear the education officer in a museum giving a talk to school students who are about to start a one-week work placement in the museum. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen and answer questions 11 to 15.
Good morning and welcome. We're really pleased that you're going to be joining us next week for your work placement. Now, each of you will already have met the member of museum staff assigned to supervise you. In this short talk today, I'll be giving you more general information which will be relevant to all six of you. Your normal working day is 9 to 5pm, but on Monday, because it's your first day, we'd like you to arrive at 9:15. Please note, though, that you'll finish at the usual time. A lot of you have been asking what you should wear for work. Well, you may have noticed that we're not exactly a formal institution, so you'd really be out of place if you wear smart attire like a suit. If you go out on a trip with us, then we'd like you to wear a museum cap. It has our logo on, and we feel it helps people recognise you. But on a day-to-day basis in the museum itself, we say put on your own casual clothing because you'll be doing lots of dusty, messy work. Now, we don't have an enormous number of rules, but work placement is an excellent preparation for the real world of work, and we expect you to be very punctual and reliable. If you're not well or there's been a hold-up, then what we ask you to do is ring the museum receptionist. He will be in the museum well ahead of opening time, and he'll inform your own personal supervisor in the museum. If you're away for more than one day, we'll inform your school tutor. They'll obviously need to make a note of your absence and follow up if necessary. But most of all, we hope you really enjoy yourselves during the placement. Students say they have a lot of fun, whether it's working with kids in our art workshops held every Monday, or, the most popular, when they go out on our outreach work to residential homes, recording elderly people's memories of school days for our oral history project. So, we hope you feel excited by the prospect of starting next week and well prepared. Your personal supervisor will be there to help you with our health and safety requirements when you start next week, and your supervisors will also brief you about the background to the museum, summarising all the huge amount of information on our website. In the next couple of days, it might be worthwhile if you get hold of evaluations and other notes made by students who've worked with us before. You can get a lot of pointers from them.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
Now, before I finish today, I wanted to help you find your way around the museum. When you start next Monday, the first thing you'll need to do is sign in. Come through the main entrance and you'll see the main staircase straight ahead. To the right of this is the statue of the horse, and just behind that is a door. Go through that, and that's the sign-in office. Now, on the first day, you'll be working in Gallery 1. You'll find this as follows. In the central courtyard area, close to the entrance, there's a large chest where visitors put donations for the museum. The door just behind that leads to Gallery 1. The workshop you'll be taking part in starts at 11, but if you want to go in earlier, you can get the key and let yourself in. The key box is quite hard to find. Walk behind reception, and it's between the large gallery and the bookshop. I haven't mentioned breaks, lunch, etc. Unfortunately, our cafe's closed at the moment, so your best bet is to bring a packed lunch. We tend to have our sandwiches in the kitchen area. Go round the reception desk and you'll see a small circular cabinet. The door to the kitchen area is just behind that. Now, every day, we put up notices about what's happening in the museum. Your supervisor will brief you, but if you want to check up on details, look on our staff notice board. This is in the corner of the play area, at the back, on the wall of Gallery 3. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to help.
That is the end of part 2.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 3.
Part 3.
You are going to hear part of a lecture on some useful information for your travelling around Britain. Listen to the lecture and complete the notes below.
First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the session on Britain. This afternoon, I would like to provide some useful information for you about travelling around Britain. Britain has over 700 tourist information centres. You will find them at major ports, airports, stations, historic landmarks and towns, and holiday centres. So just look out for this sign that says Tourist Information. The staff will be able to answer your holiday queries, as well as provide essential maps, guides and brochures. tourist information centres at major ports and airports in London and addresses of British Tourist Authority European offices are all listed on the tourist information centres. Now, let's talk about the telephone in Britain. You know, Britain is well supplied with public telephones. Street kiosks take lop coins. In city centres, mainline railway stations, airports and central London underground stations, payphones and card phones are in operation. For the latter, small plastic phone cards are used and these come in 10, 20, 40, 100 and 200 units and can be bought at post offices, news kiosks, station bars and shops where the green and white card phone sign is displayed.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 26 to 30.
When using the different public telephone systems, make sure you read the dialing instructions carefully. Now let's see the banks in Britain. There are 24-hour banks at London's two main airports. One is Heathrow and the other is Gatwick. Otherwise, banks are normally open from 9:30 to 3:30, Monday to Friday. Barclays Bank and National Westminster Bank offer a Saturday morning service at some of their branches. National Gyrobanks has 42 bureaux de change located in post offices throughout the country in main tourist areas. Opening hours are 9 to 5:30 weekdays, 9 to 12:30 Saturday mornings. One exception to this is the Trafalgar Square office, whose opening hours are 8 to 8 weekdays and Saturdays, and 10 to 5 on Sundays. The Bureau de Change services are available to overseas visitors. Visitors can change their money there. You can also change money at Bureau de Change, large hotels, department stores and travel agents. Be sure to check in advance the rate of exchange and the commission charged, as these vary considerably. Wherever possible, you are advised to use the bank or Bureau de Change, which conforms to the BTA Code of Conduct. In most cases, this is indicated by display of the code.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 4.
Part 4.
We'll hear a speech by the Student Union Vice President for Finance.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Now you will hear the speech.
Hello, as VP of Finance, my job is to oversee the spending of our grant to ensure that all areas of student union activity run efficiently and smoothly, without any financial headaches. I have a thoroughly efficient finance team, Ursula, Ella and Henrik. We are all here to help you as best as we can. Remember that even though I administer the union's finances, it is ultimately you who has the final say in expenditure policy, either directly, through the democratic process of the general meetings, or by voicing your opinions through the Executive Finance Committee. I would like to take this opportunity to thank last year's VP Finance, Martin Curry, for his excellent work in improving the financial running of the union to what it is today. Finally, remember to enjoy yourself and to use the union facilities and services to the full. And if you're still not satisfied, come and let us know why. Extra note, in order to maximise my time as VP Finance and to give a more efficient service to students, the Finance Office will only be open to students from 11 o'clock a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. and 2 o'clock p.m. to 3 o'clock p.m. The Cashier's Office will be open from 12 o'clock noon to 2 o'clock p.m. daily.
That is the end of part 4.